So, everybody, I hope you have a good night here with Jay Langis. We give him a round of applause. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jay. I'm an alcoholic. And my name is Jay Lene, not Lanise, but there's an S in there that'll throw you off. So it's not the thing. It's the thing behind the thing. Thank you, Uncle Jim. Appreciate you. It was good talking to you. I live in Sherman Oaks, California, but I got sober in Fresno on January 7th, 1989. So now you know where you stand with me. If you have more time than me, you're better. Okay. But if you have less time than me, I want you to listen up. Okay. Because school's in session. Wouldn't that be great if that's the way AA actually worked? But it's not. You know, because I know people who are 40 years sober I wouldn't send a sick cat to if they were a vet. And I know people who have 90 days sober who work in a better program than I am. They're on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. They're on fire to feel hope every morning that they wake up, that they feel like they may never have to drink or use again. They have hope that everything's going to be all right, that there might be a chance that they can have new friends and new faces and places outside of the world that they were trapped in, that they no longer have to go check the bumper on their car to see if there's blood on it. Well, nowadays they call the Uber driver, you know, like, where was I last night? Where are my pants? Have you seen my pants? You know, I was talking with a guy the other day that I sponsor. I got fired last Monday. It was a very glorious day. And I didn't want to be there anyways. I didn't like the guy. It's I'm not judging. I'm just reporting what I see, you know. And I couldn't get a hold of my sponsor. So I was on the phone with one of the guys I sponsored 6 months sober, and I said, hey, can I use you as my sponsor right now? I want to get something off my chest. And he said, yeah. And I said, look, I just got berated, you know, by somebody who doesn't know what the hell they're doing in life and should not be running a company. And I come from a place where I ran big companies and did big things and stuff. So, you know, there's no ego involved on my part at all. And I told him what happened, and he gave me great counsel. I let him in. And that's how it's always worked for me, you know, for 31 years, is that you know you're a good sponsor when the guy that you're sponsoring one day will be able to sponsor you. That's when you know you did a good job. You know, and that's how I sponsor people. I give them direction. And if it works, I try it, you know. And if it doesn't, I don't, you know. You say your wife's talking bad about you, you know. I say you go in there and say, listen, woman, I wear the pants in that house. And then call me back and let me know how that works. I'm curious. And see if that works out. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Fresno, California. We have Blackstone. You have Mooney Boulevard. We talk about you in Fresno. except nobody cares. Nobody cares. I drank a lot. Man, I drank a lot of alcohol. I loved alcohol. I'm so grateful to alcohol for keeping me alive. If it weren't for alcohol and drugs as well, I would have never made it in this world. When I found drugs and alcohol, particularly alcohol, I found the secret to life. I knew that life was going to be fantastic now. That no matter what happens, I'm going to be able to handle this. It's going to be great. I'm excited. I saw pictures of myself later on in my life at like a really nice restaurant, like in LA or some big city like that. When you're from, you know, Clovis, California, which I went to Clovis High, I saw, you know, girls on each arm, and I'm sitting in a paparazzi comes up and takes a picture of me, and I got a cigarette and I got a cocktail, and life's perfect, man. It's like, hey, you know, leave me alone. I'm with the girls, you know. None of that ever happened, by the way. You know, I went to L.A. 30 years ago to become an actor, and I've been in sales and marketing for 30 years now, so... But I sat next to some famous people, and I will tell you their names, you know, because I have no character. I'm just kidding. I won't. And, you know, it's like if you and I go to Detroit and go to meetings in Detroit, we're going to be sitting next to people who build cars, you know. You know, if you go to L.A., you're going to be sitting next to actors. If you go to Chicago, you're going to be sitting next to an Italian. I don't know what you're going to be sitting next to. I drank a lot. I committed a lot of crimes. I robbed houses, not like a, you know, with a gun. Just was the little creepy guy that went in there and with my buddies and robbed stuff and then sold it. You know, I was like Robin Hood, except I would rob from the rich and then sell to the poor and live off of that. And, you know, my dad left when I was a little kid, and my two brothers were taken into custody by their real father, and my sister was, I never saw her again, because she was on my dad's side. And my mom and I went from a family of five to a family of just me and her. And we moved down to the Tower District in Fresno. I say that because some of you probably know it. It was gnarly, you know, 45 years ago. I was jumped a lot. I was one of the only guys in my neighborhood that looked like me, you know, with white skin, had a big mouth. And I was really scared. So when alcohol came around with the babysitter, which was great, and the babysitter was totally hot, and as an eight-year-old, I know what hot is. And I wanted to grow up anyways. I wanted to get big fast, you know. I wanted to, you know, I can remember shaving my face and cutting my face when I was a kid, you know. I had no hair, but I cut my face. I remember shaving my legs and cutting my legs up because I saw my mom doing it. I thought that would help. Maybe that should be left on my fourth step. I don't know. I really don't know. Probably too much information for Visalia or, you know, Madeira, you know. And I was doing pretty good in life, you know. I mean, I was the homecoming king of Fresno City College, you know. That's a big, gigantic thing there. I was the president of Delta Psi Omega, which was the drama club. I was the executive vice president of the Honor Society. I was the assistant manager at the Subway sandwiches on First McKinley. And I had earned that position. I didn't just come in and they hired an assistant manager. I worked my way up to that at $3.35 an hour, which was huge for me. And I was also the Actor of the Year at Fresno City College for 3 years in a row at a two-year college. It's a true story. And, I mean, I had hit rock top, you know. And, you know what's funny about that, other than all of it, is I always felt like such a loser my whole life. I always knew I wasn't enough, and I knew there was something wrong with me. I always knew it, and I mean that. And I always felt like I was going to move to Someday Isle, you know? Someday I'll get my shit together. Someday I'll have money. Someday I'll not have to worry about what people think about me. Someday I'll be okay. So when I started winning those little awards or getting those little acknowledgments, they worked. But they worked for a very short amount of time, and then I was left with nothing. And I know it doesn't seem like a lot, and I make a joke of it, but I had nothing. And then when I started accomplishing some things, I didn't even have the dream that when I accomplish something someday that I'm going to feel better about myself, because I had it and it wasn't enough. So I drank more. I love to drink. And I never sat around thinking I feel sad about myself. I feel like I'm not enough to drink. I just knew that it was a party all the time, hammered down. And my last drink was 3 pints of Southern Comfort. And the next night was my very, very last drink, which was, I had a half of a Michelob Dry. And the Michelob Dry had just come out that week, you know, because the commercials were out. Michelob Dry. Try that dry beer. So I thought I'd try the dry beer because I was getting in so much trouble with all the wet beer. And I remember drinking half of it and putting it down, looking at it and saying, and I said, I'm done. Because I knew that no matter how much I drank, it wasn't going to help me erase the past. It wasn't going to help me to dream for the future, and it wasn't going to help me in the now anymore, no matter how much I drank. Because the night before when I drank 3 pints of Southern Comfort, I didn't even really get drunk. I got a little blurry, but I didn't get that drunk that I needed. And that's how I know I'm an alcoholic, is when no matter how much I drink anymore, I can't get there anymore. Because if I could, I would have kept doing it. So the one thing that ever made me feel like I could just breathe with you, that I could step out easy, that I could ask a girl to dance, that I could have sex with someone else in the room, that I have courage, stop working. And AA hasn't started working yet. That's a scary place to be. So I called central office. And I said, they said, Alcoholics Anonymous, can you hold? That's Fresno for you. And I said, yeah. And I was living in a garage in Fresno, and I lived in that garage for 3.5 years. And I had a phone line back there, and I was standing at the phone, you know, because there's no chair right there, and I was standing there.
Oh, is this the one where it's like intimate vigil?
Yes.
Hey, Matthew. I love when people do that. It's like when people's phone goes off in an AA meeting, I go, Alcoholics Anonymous. Always gets a very big laugh. Very fun. If you come down here with the movie stars and stuff, I'll do that joke for you in person. And, you know, all my scorecards read zero. So she clicked back over and she said, you know, I'm so sorry. We have, I'm almost done with the guy on the other line. Will you please hold? I said, sure. And then she clicked back over and she said, you know, we have a really sick one on the other line. Can you just please hold for 10 more seconds? And I was crying. And I said this. I said, lady, I got nowhere else to go. And she said, oh, let me take you right now. And she said, what would you like? I said, I want to go to one of your thingamajigs. And she said, you mean meetings? And she said, are you sober today? Which is borderline none of your business. We just met. It's a very intrusive question. You know, I don't know you. And I go, yeah, Sally Sue, I am. Are you? And she goes, oh, my goodness, yes, I have 8 years. And then I thought, pitiful. 8 years and you're still working the phones. Good for you, working those phones. You'd think you'd graduate and get the hell out of there like I'm going to do if I ever go into this godforsaken place, Alcoholics Anonymous. And she sent me over to the survivors group. So I got there early because that's the kind of alcoholic I am. I'm an early arriver and a late leaver. I always have been. I'm the sickest kind of alcoholic I've ever met in my life. I'm a perfectionist. And I remember a guy saying to me once in AA, he goes, "Jay, you're a perfectionist, right?" And I go, "You're damn right I am, Bob." And he says, "Tell me, what have you ever perfected?" And that's when I stopped talking to Bob. We don't talk anymore. I don't need Bob in my life. Because a perfectionist is never happy. It's never good enough. And neither is anybody else around them. It's a painful place to live. And it's because I'm more afraid than anyone. I'm just afraid. So scared all the time. I went to the meeting and a guy came up to me and he goes, "Hey, can you read how it works?" I looked at him and I go, "Yeah, can you?" And he goes, "Yeah, I can, but I'm asking you to do it." And I go, "Well, all right then, bro." You know? I was a little angry. And I said, "How it works, rarely have we seen it." He goes, no, it'll be in about 20 minutes when the meeting starts. And when the meeting starts, there's a format and then I'll point to you. And I could swear I heard his eyes roll. And then I took the format when he wasn't looking, and I went into one of the other rooms and I proofread it. And they were looking for the format, and I had the whole format. What the hell happened to the format? I don't know. I think that kid's in Al-Anon, and he came in here and stole it just to screw with us. I don't know. You know, he looks like an alcoholic. He's got a mullet. And I proofread it about three times, like it was going to be an audition or something. And there was about 14 men in that meeting, and it was a men's stag. And I read it like this. I was studying Shakespeare at the time at Fresno City College. I was on my way to UCLA. I was studying iambic pentameter. So I read it like this. "How it works, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path." And I was whispering through it and bringing in levels and shit. It was god-awful. Oh, people were just going, "Just read it." They did the hard part. They wrote it. "Just read it." And I just, so they weren't really getting it because, you know, Fresno. And so I started adding shit, you know. "One, we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives have become unmanageable. That's why I'm here, right? You here too? Hey, man, AA," and throw my AA gang signs, you know. And, they didn't like that part either. They were really unaccepting people. And and once the show was over, the meeting started. And the meeting was spectacular. It was unlike anything. Unlike anything I'd ever experienced in my life. They just started talking real. They were so real. They were so authentic. They were so much better than me. And I was riveted. I had never, ever, ever heard anybody so real. And they weren't talking about anything spectacular. And then we were laughing. One guy was sharing his story. He said something like, "Yeah, my wife always thought she could stop me, you know, from drinking. I remember one time, I'm done with you, woman." And I walked out and got in the car, and she got behind the car to stop me. So, you know, I ran her over, you know, and everybody, we're all laughing. Wow. And I'm thinking, God, this is dark what we're laughing at right now, but it is the funniest damn thing in the world. And I can remember really gutturally laughing and noticing that I was laughing for real. And he goes, "Yeah, no, and we've been married now, been 22 years, and she's still got a limp and everything, but, you know, we love each other, you know." And I just remember just rolling, and I wanted in. I wanted into this part of the meeting. So I had my hand up, and they weren't calling on me because of how I screwed up how it works. They said, "No, you had your chance. No, you're just a reader." So I interrupted the meeting. I said, "Hey, Rick, I've had my hand up for a while, so I've had it up before some of the other people that you've called on." So, and he goes, "Yeah, go ahead, kid," which was bullshit because I was 20, you know, I was 20. And And I had a speech written in my mind that I was going to share to win you all over. Because that was my first drug of choice, was your approval. Long before alcohol. If I could just get you to like me, I'll be okay. And I was sitting there, and it was racing through my head. What I was going to say to win you over. And I had this feeling like, you're a liar and you better start telling the truth. That they're going to see through you. So tell the truth or you're going to twist in the wind, man. And I just said this. I said, I'm Jay, I'm an alcoholic. And everybody said, hi, Jay. And when I read How It Works before, I didn't say my name and the disease because I'd never been to an AA meeting before and I didn't know how it worked. And no one said to me, what's your name? What's your name? What's your name? You got to say your name. And it was a closed meeting. I think they kind of assumed the fact that I was an alcoholic just by the way I was acting. But no one made me say anything or do anything. And they should have because I believe in the traditions. I believe in closed meetings. And when I said it, it's like it echoed in my head. I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. That's what it is. And I said, my dad beat me when I was a kid. And I shit canned the whole speech that I was going to say, and I just started saying stuff. And I said, and I got in a fist fight with my dad 2 nights ago. My knuckles are swollen. He wasn't there, but I was just punching the walls and having an argument with him. I see things sometimes. I see images. I hallucinate sometimes. Every time I tried to stop drinking, I would hallucinate. Why would you tell strangers that? I had no reason to tell you that. I talked about my mom trying to control me. I talked to my girlfriend, you know, being a girl. And when I was done sharing, all the hands kind of slowly went up around the room. And I felt the energy of the room turn directly at me. I felt like everybody in the room shift their kind of hate at who I came in there fronting to be to like, okay, he's the one in need. He's got no time. Let's help him. He just drank. And each one of them stared directly at me. Boy, Jay, you talked about your dad beating you, man. Boy, I can relate to that. Yeah, man. Well, you're in the right place, kid. You keep coming back. Another guy said, you talked about your mom. Boy, I can relate. Blah, 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 blah. He says, you make it to midnight tonight, Jay, without a drink or a drug. And you're a winner, man, in our book. And I stayed up that night in the garage that I lived in Fresno to feel what it felt like to be a winner. And when it turned midnight, felt pretty damn good. They invited me to come back. I came back the next night, and when I walked in, a couple of them were like, hey, this is the guy from last night. You Jay, right? And I go, yeah, yeah. And they go, how many days you got? I go, today is two. And they go, this guy's got 2 days. Garrett, let's get him a cup of coffee, and you know, blah, blah, blah. And they made my 2 days have value. And then on day three, I asked this guy named Eric to be my sponsor at the Alano Club. And I said, hey, will you be my sponsor? And he goes, well, I only got 9 months. And I go, is there a rule? He goes, I don't know, wait here. And he went in to ask his sponsor. And a few minutes later, he pops through the double doors and he goes, we're on. And I go, all right. I go, what do we do? He goes, I don't have a freaking clue. And we sat out there sucking down our feelings, you know, and he said, are you powerless over alcohol? And I said, yeah. He said, and your life's unmanageable? I said, yeah. He says, you come to believe in a power greater than yourself, restore your sanity? I said, yeah, the Lord Jesus Christ. He goes, now hold on, we don't go that far around here. We get weird now. I got 9 months, you're freaking me out. I said, I don't even believe that. I thought that's what you wanted to hear. He goes, man, no one wants to hear that around here. Just shut up and just, do you believe in something greater than you? And I said, yes. And he goes, okay. Make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understood him. And I said, yes. He goes, okay, go home. You're on four. And we were like two wet pieces of spaghetti trying to hold each other up, man. I was the first guy he ever sponsored. And 89 days sober, in that garage that I lived in, I read my four-step to him. I did five. I did six and seven. I didn't truly understand them. I just turned 21 years old. I didn't understand humility. I had none. But I wanted to understand it. I believed that I was a good person. I believed in all the right things. And I loved in the right way many times, but I had no idea how selfish and self-centered I really was in my life. And at a year and a half sober in Los Angeles, I left Fresno at 8 months sober, and I moved to Los Angeles to go to UCLA. I got into the theater and film school. And at a year and a half sober, I was driving my scooter to school, and it hit me, bam, right in the forehead, how selfish I was. It just hit me really, really hard. And I said, I went to a phone booth. If you're new or you're young, a phone booth is one of these things that used to come out of the ground, and you pick it up, and you could push buttons, but you put in a coin for like a dime or a couple of dimes and a nickel and a quarter, and you could actually call people. You couldn't text from it, but you could call. So I just want to be helpful. I called him and I said, hey, Eric, I just realized, man, I called him in Fresno. I said, I've never asked you how you were doing. He said, no, you never have. I said, well, geez, easy on me, buddy. I said, I just realized how self-centered I am, man. I said, I call you and you ask me how I'm doing, and I talk for 20 minutes and I go, well, listen, I got to go. And you never said anything. And he goes, no, no. And I said, so how are you? And he goes, good. You know, Eric, this is why I never asked you how you were doing, you know? He said to me, he goes, I guess now's a good time to tell you. I said, tell me what? He said, the night that you asked me to be your sponsor, I had just taken my 9-month ship, and I went to the liquor store before the meeting, and I bought a 12-pack, and I put it in my refrigerator at home. And I said, I'm going to give it one more meeting. And then you pulled me outside to ask me to be your sponsor. He goes, why did you pull me outside to ask me to be your sponsor? He goes, I never shared. Every time they called on me, I passed. I sat in the back of the room. I never talked to anybody. I said hi to you once. He goes, like, why me? And I go, because you said hello to me. He said, so that night, I went home and I poured out all the beers. And I stayed sober for you. I wonder who did that for you. Who was the man or woman that did that for you? Those are the people I want to meet. Those are my heroes. They don't wear a big flag like I do, but that silently love people like us. Five and a half years sober, my higher power left me for another guy. No warning. a guy that was going to open up a cell phone store. And I tried to tell her, cell phones ain't going to make it. They're never going to make it. No one's going to have a cell phone. They're too big. They're bulky. $1.29 a minute is ridiculous. I was wrong. I fell apart. I didn't even like her, but I fell apart. I just didn't want her to leave me. And I didn't want her to be with anybody else because that's what true love is. And I just fell apart. My sponsor is a guy named Jim Miller. Jim Miller's coming up on 59 years next month. And I just fell apart. And I said, Jim, I don't know what to do. And he says, why don't we write a letter to your dad? And that we're not going to read to him, but just get out all your feelings to your dad, just all your anger. Because I was dealing with the fact that she left, and then everybody who ever left me in the past left all over again, and it just hurt, and it crushed my soul. And I didn't know what was happening to me. I said, I stayed sober for this. So I wrote the letter, and the letter went something like this. Dad, you son of a bitch, I hate your guts. You never paid child support. You beat me. You beat Mom. You made me feel stupid all the time. You called me a little N-word. You called me a little faggot. You dealt drugs, cop cars on the front lawn. And how dare you not love me? I was a good kid, and I loved you. And all those games for Clovis High that I played, all those sports, all those activities, all those awards, all that stuff I won, I look up the sidelines and you weren't there for any of them. And I hate your guts. And Jim said after I read it, he goes, that was beautiful. And I felt like I had just had a baby, you know. He said, you left some things out. He said, why don't you put this down? Add this to the bottom. And with all of that, Dad, I still love you. So I wrote that. And I wrote, and I've been waiting by the phone all of these years for you to call. And today I'm going to stop waiting. And you're free now, Dad. And that was the day that I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. At 25 and a half years old, at 5 and a half years sober. That was the day that I stopped putting women in my life that were unavailable to love me. I stopped putting friends in my life that couldn't make time for me. I stopped trying to fix people, places, and things. I got outside help like page 133 talks about. I didn't get sober to be miserable. At 7 and a half years sober, I realized I'm probably going to be one of these old timers in AA. You know, one of these really old, crusty guys. You know, that's where I'm headed. But I didn't want to be the one that had the leather-bound big book and the chips hanging from him and didn't know how to love. I didn't want to be the guy that has 500 years of sobriety and is alone and right. And I knew that I lacked the ability to form a true partnership with another human being. I knew that there was something defectively wrong with me when it came to relationships. Because I just didn't know how to have one. It was either a codependent relationship or I'm saving the day, you know, I'm swooping in to save the day. Or, you know, I'm the dominant one. You know, it was never, I just didn't know how to do it, man. And between my wife's parents and my parents, there's 14 marriages. 14. 14. So I started, he said, I want you to start, my sponsor said, I want you to start talking to married couples. Okay? Ask them how they did it. Just sit down. So I started talking to the married couples in AA, all three of them. And asked them, like, how do you do it? Like, how did you date? How did you guys meet each other? You know, and they started giving me advice, really good, really different advice than my single guy friends who were players, you know, very different advice. I remember one guy said, you ever hear this song, Jay, Getting to Know You, Getting to Know All About You? And I said, yeah, my grandma used to listen to that. And he goes, try that. Try getting to know a girl. Do you sleep with her right away? And I go, all of them. Yeah. And he goes, stop doing that. And I was like, okay. And it was at such a place that I told my sponsor, I said, I want to be married. I want to have kids. I want the house. I want a white picket fence. I want a family. That's what I want. And he goes, well, you're going to have to work for it. And you're going to have to talk to people who know how to do it. So I did that. So I asked this girl out. We were dating. And our third day, we went to La Cana Veneta in Hollywood, you know, a real shishi restaurant with the wine list that's that thick. I knew the guy at the maitre d' guy. I said, I know you. How do I know you? And he says, I don't know. You work out at Easton Gym. You hang out. No, no. He goes, are you a friend of Bill W's? I said, yeah, I'm a friend of Bill W's. I said, what's your name? And he said, my name is Bill. That's my son right there. Yeah, that's what 80 days looks like. He's gotten 15 tattoos in the last 2 months. I'm not judging. 3 piercings. Maybe 4. I don't know where the fourth one is. We just have to guess. I have no tattoos, no piercings. The night is young. He said, my name is Bill. And I said, hey, Bill. I said, I'm Jay, and this is Jamie. He sat us down. He was our food server. He says, well, can I get you guys to drink? We have water. Gas, no gas. We have sodas, juices. She goes, I'll have a glass of Merlot. And he goes, yeah, okay, yeah. And he looked at me, like, are you in or are you out? Because I really don't care. And I go, I'll have the Diet Coke 96. And he goes, ah, got it. Yeah, okay, I'll be right back. And he left, and she leans into me, and she goes, how do you know that guy? That was weird. And I said, oh, we have mutual friends. So if you're new in the room, just know that, you know, that's a good one, you know, because we're going to run up to you and we have no boundaries. And when COVID is over, we're going to meet you at the movies. And one of us is going to come up to you and go, hey, man, how's it going? And you're on a date and they're going to be scratching themselves and they're going, hey, you going to a meeting tonight? You know, yeah, hey, I got 9.5 days, you know, it's good. I just got out, you know, everything's good, man. Hey, who's the lady? She nice, yeah. You know, and you have to act like you have a twin, you know, that's what you have to do. And, but she wasn't buying it. She goes, no, I come here all the time. They don't whittle off a water list. And I just gotten to the point of my sobriety where I'm going to stop reading my 4-step on my dates because these married people told me not to. Like, here's the things to look out for. My dad used to beat me when I was a kid, okay? I know the odds are I'm probably going to beat the shit out of you, but I promise you I won't. I've gone to a lot of therapy, even though I still get pretty angry. You know, my dad left when I was a kid. I've had abandonment issues. Where are you going? Are you going to the bathroom? Do you need me to go with you? Because I can. Because I'm all better now. I hope you're not a runner. And then, and oh, by the way, I'm in AA, so let's just clear the air. I'm one of those. I am a 12-stepper. It's the most important thing in my life, and it comes number one, okay? So, shall we open with some crab cakes, you know? And, you know, women don't want to hear that something else is number one on the first date, and I could never get a second date because I would, like, give all these warning things out, and I stopped doing that. And I started getting to know this woman. And because I chose to do it different, and because I chose to follow direction, and because I chose not to hop into bed with her right away and to get to know her, she's in the other room right now. And we're together for coming up on 24 years. 24 years. And I've been with her since the first day I met her. I've never been with another woman physically. Mentally, I'm a wreck, but physically, it's a big plus for a guy like me. We have our son, who's 19 right there, Julian, who just came in. My wife is Jamie. He's 19. Jaden is 17. He just got 1 year on August 7th. On May 6th of last year, I had to break down the door. He was almost dead on the floor from fentanyl overdose. He was purple. His lips were purple. His gums were purple. And I was doing CPR on him, whispering in his ear. Begging, please don't leave me. He's got a great sponsor. He's doing the best he can. He just graduated high school this week. And then I have a daughter who's 13 named Josie. So Jay, Jamie, Julie, and Jade, and then Josie were the J5. And if you're new, I just want to tell you this, that I wanted a family and I got one. And I didn't know it was going to be this hard in the teenage years with the alcoholism. But I'm all in. And I want to finish by just saying this, that if 31 years ago when I kneeled and prayed after my first AA meeting to God, if I would have said, I said, God, please let this be real that happened in this meeting. Because if this is what it's going to be like, I can do this. I like this. I can do this whenever you want me to. And if God would have came back and said, look, here's the deal. I'll do it. I'll take away the drugs and the alcohol, and I'll give you peace. But 31 and a half years from now, you're going to have a wife and three kids, and two of your kids are going to be in deep trauma, and two of them are almost going to die from drugs. And it's going to be 10 times more painful than what you're feeling right now. But I'll get you clean and sober and give you a good life. I would have said, I'll take the deal. Because God would have said to me, I need to have a sober dad taking care of them. Can you do it? And I would have said, I'll take it. Is my wife going to be hot? And he would say, yes. Yes, your wife's going to be hot. And she is. All that I have, all that I am, all that I hope to be, I got here 31 years, 7 months and a few days ago today. So thank you so much, Visalia. I love you guys for having me.
Well, how can we-